Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and today we are talking about raw milk. My guest on the phone is Bill Marler. Bill is a well-known food safety expert and the managing partner of the Seattle law firm Marler & Clark, as well as being a nationally recognized expert in food safety issues. Marler began working with victims of foodborne illness in 1993 when he represented the most seriously injured survivor of the Jack in the Box E. coli outbreak. And since then, he has represented thousands of victims of foodborne illness, including Stephanie Smith, the subject of a Pulitzer Prize-winning story in the New York Times about E. coli contamination. Mr. Marler's advocacy for a safer food supply includes petitioning the United States Department of Agriculture to better regulate pathogenic E. coli, working with nonprofit food safety and foodborne illness victims organizations, and helping to spur the passage of the 2010-2011 FDA Food Safety Modernization Act. Welcome, Bill. How are you? How are you doing, man?
I'm good.
I want you to know that I had my first and only anxiety dream about this radio show last night, or rather earlier this morning. And in the show, you did not answer the phone.
Sorry about that.
No problem. And I thought to myself.
My wife answered it this morning, so it's all good.
All right. Well, here you are. And what we wanted to talk about today was raw milk, because I know you and I share a lot of similar attitudes about this. And mine is by no means an earthy, crunchy one. I am not a fan of raw milk. Let me say that right off the top. I think that milk is pasteurized for a very good reason. And I think that people wanting to drink raw milk, well, you know, I got to question their wisdom there. But and I know that you also sponsor an online newsletter called Real Raw Milk Facts. And one of the features are video clips of families who have been made sick from raw milk. So it could safely be said that you too have a bit of an attitude about it. So why do you feel so strongly about this?
Well, I think one of the things about raw milk, and it's I think one of the things that I've learned in sort of being in the middle of it, mostly as an advocate for, you know, kids who've gotten severely sick or adults who've gotten sick. You know, I've represented literally dozens of people. One woman who developed Guillain-Barré syndrome after drinking raw milk tainted with Campylobacter, and that she's still paralyzed 3.5 years later. And you've got a 60-person Campylobacter outbreak ongoing in Pennsylvania, New
That's
Jersey.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's a risky proposition. You know, I've also represented kids who've suffered acute kidney failure because of E. coli in raw milk. You know, but I also recognize, you know, people want the ability, you know, to consume food, and they, you know, equate it to a freedom, which I can completely respect. I think the problem is that the information that's out there about it's sort of, you know, miraculous food goodness for you is, you know, pretty suspect. And when you balance that against, you know, the real risk, especially to kids, that's why, you know, we worked, donated money to University of California, Davis, and helped fund and build this you know, realrawmilkfacts.com website.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, I mean, let's back up for a second and talk a little bit about some of the mythology surrounding raw milk. I mean, first of all, nobody ever talks about the fact that it really tastes good. And it's true that raw milk, I guess, I mean, I don't drink it, but I suppose it tastes really good. I know that really fresh milk, for instance, when you go out to a dairy producing state like Kansas mm-hmm. or something like that, just super fresh milk in a glass bottle is a whole different experience. Raw milk, I suppose, I mean, raw milk cheeses are great. Everybody likes them better than pasteurized milk cheeses. But let's talk a little bit about some of the miraculous properties it supposedly has, which include reversal of food allergies, of asthma. I certainly pricked up my ears at that since I have both of those. It, you know, has more nutrition, blah, blah, blah. And yet when I did research about this for this program, I found that the principal website propounding all of these miracles was the Weston Price Foundation.
Right.
And it was based on studies that had all been conducted in the 30s. I mean, to every single one of them. There was not one mm-hmm. single piece of relevant, new, contemporary research into raw milk that they were able to post on this website, which made me laugh. I mean, I think the Weston Price Foundation, you know, is suspect from the get-go. So, but I know that it is incredibly popular, and I don't understand why.
Well, you know, I back into that question a little bit. You know, one is I think we all need to recognize that, and this is from talking to, you know, moms and dads who bought raw milk for their kids, and really, absolutely, in their absolute heart, believed that they were doing the right thing.
Sure.
And they also, you know, had sort of started to move away from, you know, mass-produced, mass-processed foods, you know, to organic. And then were disappointed in organic when, you know, organic became mainstream and Walmart started selling it. And, you know, they went local. And then, you know, you had started having farmers markets in the parking lot of Walmart. You know, people kept moving sort of further and further away. And raw milk is sort of like this thing that is like a beacon of, it's about as far away as you can get from, you know, mainstream processed food. And, you know, at least on the, you know, when you're buying it directly from the farm. But, you know, I think one of the things that's happening now is raw milk is starting to be mass produced. And there's been this outbreak in Pennsylvania. There was an outbreak late last year in California.
That's right, in November. I read up mm-hmm. on that one too.
And the two, those are the two largest raw milk dairies in the country, you know, each with over 250 cows, which, you know, I don't think anybody would necessarily say that's a, you know, a small dairy. But, you know, as it relates to the health benefits, there are some interesting studies all in Europe that deal with the consumption of raw milk and its potential, you know, effect on allergies. The studies are somewhat difficult because it's hard to sort of parse out the kids that are drinking raw milk on the farm and the, you know, the allergenic effect of, you know, being on a farm and being, you know, around, you know, those sorts of, you know, animals and grasses.
Sure.
And all those things. And it's hard to parse that out between, was it the raw milk or was it the environment that you're living in? But, you know, people, when they read a study, you know, they want to believe what their preconceived notion is, and so they read that the way they want to read it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, you know, nutritional you know, enzymes and vitamins that are denatured during the pasteurization process, the heating process. But those are, you know, things that can be picked up, you know, in other food items that don't carry as high a risk as raw milk.
And some of them are added back in anyway. Like,
sure.
For instance, vitamin A is not naturally mm-hmm. occurring mm-hmm. in milk, but it is added. Vitamin D is also added.
Right.
How many people do you think, you know, one of the things that I think I've even read on your site is that raw milk is, you know, has really increased its numbers mm-hmm. in terms of foodborne illness. So, but what are we talking about in terms of numbers? Like, how many people are getting, how many people are drinking it? And of that group, how many, what's the percentage of people who are actually getting sick? I mean, because then I want to talk about states' rights and why people can't just drink it.
Right.
You know, revisit that concept.
Then the difficulty with, you know, any sort of, you know, foodborne illness statistical analysis is that a lot of people don't necessarily report, you know, even moderate illnesses. And the only time they get reported is, you know, frankly, when there's a stool culture positive, which requires somebody to be sick enough to really go to the ER to, you know, to get treatment. So you're at first, you're cutting out an enormous swath of people who likely are sickened by, you know, raw milk or, frankly, whatever food. And the there's a CDC has a entity called FoodNet. It's a group of 10 states and a couple of major cities that track foodborne illness and track different kinds of food consumption. They estimate that about 3% or more likely less, somewhere between 1% and 3%, people drink raw milk in the United States. You know, it's still a very, very, very small part of, you know, milk consumption in America. But we have been tracking both raw milk and pasteurized milk outbreaks, you know, really, really closely over the last 3 years. I think the data before that is, you know, not as rigorous as the data that we've been doing. And, you know, it's pretty one-sided in favor of, you know, people getting sick from drinking raw milk. And, you know, the reason why is that, you know, it's raw. And, you know, where it's produced is, you know, quite close to where, you know, fecal bacteria comes from. And, sure, you know, it's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, you do have to wonder why people who live on a dairy farm and probably do drink raw milk all the time don't get more sick, but, you know, whatever. I think when you're working with dairies that are, I mean, the ones that you just pointed out, the outfit in California, as well as the one in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm, right now, where they have 250 cattle or more as a herd, and then you have a greater, you know, you just have a greater likelihood of having some kind, yeah, of contamination, sure, enter the chain.
Right.
It makes me think of sprouts, because, like, I mean, I'm going to go right off the beaten path there, but I you know,
sprouts and raw milk almost identically.
Yeah, so, and I mean, think, you know, like, if states are legislating whether or not people can drink raw milk, which they do, and which I'm not, right, sure I agree with, even though I,
right,
think drinking raw milk is stupid.
Right.
I also wonder why sprouts are still, I mean, I was watching somebody heave a few, you know, loads of alfalfa, right, sprouts into his shopping cart the other day, and I thought to myself, boy,
right,
didn't you read the news last summer?
Right.
How many people,
well,
was,
know,
that?
I mean,
that was thousands.
I think you have to look at raw milk sort of from a historical perspective, and, the rationale for pasteurization was that, you know, in the teens and 20s, you know, one of the, you know, the major causes of foodborne illness and death was consuming raw milk. And you know, and exactly, you know, why that was, it was, you know, was it, you know, bad manufacturing processes in the cities, and you know, that absolutely was the case. And so I think people were trying to deal with those diseases, which have frankly been pretty much eliminated with the introduction of pasteurization.
That's right.
The state, the whole issue with, you know, not being allowed to sell raw milk, you know, really was a function of public health forcing, you know, the FDA to regulate it. And the way that FDA regulated it says you can't, you know, bring it across state lines, which there's a recent farmer in Pennsylvania who has gotten in a little hot water with the feds for bringing raw milk, you know, into Washington, D.C.
Or into Chicago. What was that? There was some story,
yeah,
about that, the Rough Riders.
It happens. And,
yeah,
and the raw milk producer in California who had a problem last year got in difficulty by selling his raw milk into Nevada, but labeled as pet milk or pet food, wink, wink. So,
oh,
you know, the reality is that, you know, states have, you know, then decided, and it's about half the states, a little bit more, allow for raw milk sales. And then there are permutations about, you know, it is one of those sort of states voting on a variety of things. It is on our website, Real Raw Milk Facts, we actually have a map where you could click on it and you can see see what the varieties of laws are for each state.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to keep track of because they're all so incredibly different. One could argue that that's exactly what the use of, you know, federalism is all about, is that sort of, incubator for, you know, ideas, odd or not.
Right, and each state can do their own thing. They can make their
Correct.
Own decisions about how their population is going to be fed or not fed. Bill, we
Correct.
Have to take a short break now with a sponsor
Sure.
drop, and just stay on the line. We'll be right back with Bill Marler of Marler & Clark Law Firm, a well-known food safety expert. Stay tuned.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
We're back. This is Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. We're broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, 261 Moore Street. Brunch is being served. We are on the phone with Bill Marler, the managing partner for the Seattle law firm Marler & Clark, and a nationally recognized expert in food safety. And our topic today is raw milk. I wanted to read you a thing that I read in Science Daily because I sort of thought, you know, here is a periodical with no agenda, so to speak. And this is sort of the salient quotes here. Martin Weidman, a professor of food science and a doctor of veterinary medicine who also directs the Cornell Milk Quality Improvement Program, said this: raw milk represents a considerable risk for consumers who may experience severe foodborne illnesses that can be transmitted through raw milk, including diarrhea, brain infections, oh my God, abortions, and chronic neurological disease. He went on to say, farmers who sell raw milk also take a considerable risk. If raw milk sold by a given farm causes human disease, farmers are likely to be sued by lawyers, such as you, Bill Marler, specializing right. in foodborne disease litigation, and may have to pay millions of dollars to disease victims. Now, why would any farmer in his right mind want to do this, given that that is, you know, an option? I mean, he could lose his shirt, not to mention his farm. I don't understand why they want to flout these rules.
There's a couple things. I think most people don't wake up in the morning thinking, you know, the world is going to come to an end. And I think that's probably some evolutionary, good thing for us.
Well, that would not be me, Bill.
I think that in some respects, you know, food producers, you know, are focused on what it is that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And when farmers are reading either the Weston Price website or they're seeing, you know, competitors being able to sell raw milk for, you know, $14 to $18 to sometimes even $20 a gallon, the risk doesn't seem quite so bad as the potential reward. We have seen, for example, Whole Foods stop selling raw milk across the United States because of a situation that happened in Connecticut where, several children got sick, three developed kidney failure, and the farm that Whole Foods was buying raw milk from had only $1 million insurance policy. So Whole Foods wound up picking up the remainder of, you know, a very expensive tab, and they balanced it out and said, you know, it's just not worth it. And I think there are multiple farmers, you know, and some recent one examples where that's what's going to happen. There's an outbreak here in Washington where the farmer is uninsured, and, you know, there are two kids with, you know, hemolytic uremic syndrome, acute kidney failure. They're going to cause, you know, problems for them for the rest of their lives. And you know, it's going to be an expensive proposition for that farmer.
Man, I would not want to be the family that had fed my kids that raw milk, let me tell you. Let me ask you this, though. Why are the methods used by law enforcement so extreme? I mean, there is, like, you know, you read these stories that are just absolutely draconian in which, you know, law enforcement goes in and they seize the product and they jail the farmer and everybody goes crazy. I mean, it seems like so extreme. What is that about?
Well, that's where I have, you know, a lot of empathy and sympathy for, you know, the raw milk consumers. You know, I think that, you know, there's no question that when those situations happen, there, in fact, there is some violation of the law that's occurring, and that you know, what the tactic is in how the authorities come in is really driven in many respects by their fear of violence on the part of some of the consumers of raw milk. If you read a lot the websites, you know, there's a website called The Complete Patient, and there's a lot of listservs where sort of raw milk consumers and, you know, Tea Party activists and state rights activists sort of merge together. There's a lot of talk about violence and guns and war. And so,
you mean consumers?
You know, I think that a lot of times when people come in with guns drawn and subpoenas and sheriffs, part of it has to do with, you know, they're coming into what they sort of see as a potential domestic violence situation. And, you know, the reality is that there are examples, not necessarily in the raw milk field, but there's examples where people trying to enforce food safety laws, you know, have been killed.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that in the hands of, you know, a very large meatpacking plant or something like that, where it's where the ag gag laws are becoming
There was a sausage a company in California where an inspector was shot and dead because he was enforcing you know, food safety rules. So, you know, I think you can't just look at this in a vacuum, and you know, we could argue about whether or not it's reasonable for the FBI or state law authorities to come in, you know, with subpoenas and guns drawn and all of that. But I think you can't divorce it from the, you know, what's being written on the internet by some of these, you know, advocates.
I'm still gobsmacked by the concept that the Tea Party is in bed with raw milk consumers. I mean, talk about an unlikely.
Yeah, you know,
I
can't take credit for where the Tea Party and the raw milk people come together. Someone called it the Teat Party, and I thought that was quite apt.
Bill, that is priceless. That quote is worth its weight in gold, my friend. I love that. Let me ask you this then. Is the FDA or the USDA working on sanitation rules or safety regulations that would make raw milk a safer option? I mean, is there a way to clean up your dairy and somehow, like, sanitize the udder before you milk or something like that? I mean, aside from the fact that cows carry tuberculosis, folks, I mean, that may not be so true right now, but certainly it was true, and that was a big factor in the original sort of laws that govern the sale of raw milk, as Bill alluded to earlier in the show. But, you know, what can farms do? I mean, is there a way to make a compromise here so that people can drink their raw milk if they're so crazy and not get sick?
A couple of things. One is, I don't think it's going to be a federal solution. And the federal solution would not be USDA. It'd be FDA, the way, you know, we divide up the different kinds of foods, which is a whole nother story. But it would be an FDA, and I don't think you'll ever see, you know, sort of a federal rule that sort of, you know, sort of oversight of, you know, raw milk in, you know, 50 states. I think what you're going to see is a continued development, pros and cons, one way or the other, of, you know, raw milk in a given state. And, you know, some states have, you know, very different tough rules, and where you can sell it, where you can't sell it. And I think that those are just going to develop over time. Is there a way to produce raw milk safely? Well, You know, there are a lot of raw milk farmers that are, you know, serving raw milk to their, you know, customers that you, I never hear about, which obviously tells me that, that somebody's doing something right.
Right.
But I think, you know, the way I've kind of come down on this is that I think there should be more education to consumers about the real risks of raw milk, just sort of like the real risks of sprouts. And I think that there should be standards set, and they should be applied fairly. And, you know, my druthers would be that raw milk should not be sold in grocery stores where casual consumers can simply buy it. That I think if you're going to buy raw milk, you got to go out to the farm and watch how the farmer operates, you know, the raw milking process. I think that that would educate a lot of people. And, you know, I think then it comes down to also, you know, putting really good warning labels on raw milk and in place of sales. You know, recently in Maine at farmers markets, they voted not to put any sort of warning label up about raw milk and just to say not pasteurized. And, you know, for you and I get that. But for the vast majority of people who have come accustomed to milk being sold in stores and not thinking about the safety aspects, whether it has a little label on it that says not pasteurized, what does that really mean to the average consumer, I think is suspect.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Bill, unfortunately, we only have a couple minutes left, so
sure.
I hope that you'll be back. I'd love to chat about food irradiation, which is getting another another boost in the media, at
right.
least the stuff that I'm reading. I know that the meatpacking industry is going back to that as yet another potential intervention. So we can talk about that, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. I'm so glad that my dream did not come true and that you did not fail to answer your phone. And
well, my lovely wife made sure that didn't happen. So
thank her very much for me. And we'll be in touch. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for taking
it. And thank you very much.
Oh, sure. It was a pleasure. It always is.
All right.
Anyway, that
Bye-bye.
Was our guest, Bill Marler from Marler & Clark in Seattle. Really an interesting and totally knowledgeable guy. Next week, we will be talking to Jim Gerritsen from the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. Sorry about that. Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. Amazing that I remembered that. But he will be on next week to discuss further his the case that they have brought against Monsanto and what the ramifications of that are for organic and even indeed conventional farming that doesn't want to use Monsanto products. So please do join us again next week. On Monday, my name is Katie Kiefer. I want to thank my wonderful sponsor and, of course, my wonderful producer and engineer and just all-around good friend, Jack Inslee. And we'll see you next week. Have a great week, folks. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.